Welcome to the Outthinkers Podcast. Plug into fascinating minds and breakthrough ideas that are transforming industries and the world. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf, founder of Outthinker Networks, a global think tank comprised of corporate strategists, innovators, and entrepreneurs that are shaping the future of business. If this describes you, join us at outthinker.com. Now, let's dive into this week's episode.
So spatial computing is a 3D-centric form of new computing that is evolving, that at its core uses AI, computer vision, and extended reality, as well as other technologies, to seamlessly blend virtual content into someone's experience of the physical world. It is about to expand computing into everything you can see, touch, know, hear, sense, right? So it is massively important. It is the moment where human-to-human communication changes again, and the moment where human-computer interaction is about to change in new ways.
That was Kathy Hackle, a globally recognized tech and gaming executive, futurist, and speaker focused on spatial computing, virtual worlds, augmented reality, AI, and gaming platform strategy. She is the co-CEO of Spatial Dynamics, a spatial and AI solutions company, and a top tech voice on LinkedIn. A fun fact, she was the first person ever to open the NASDAQ market in the metaverse with an avatar. As you heard in the highlighted clip, Kathy is a powerful voice on spatial computing and immersive technology, guiding businesses on integrating these into their product portfolios and their business models. She's worked with companies like Nike, Ralph Lauren, Walmart, and Louis Vuitton. In this conversation, we dive deep into these topics, narrowing in on key insights from her upcoming May 2024 book, Spatial Computing, an AI-Driven Business Revolution. In this episode, Kathy shares with us the definition of spatial computing and how it's not just a new emerging technology, but rather an expansion of computing as we have known it. Spatial computing's interrelation with the metaverse or Web3 and the increasingly blurring boundaries between what we knew of as the virtual world and our physical reality. How AI is not just an addition to computing, but a convergence that is opening up new possibilities. What areas of your business model you need to be thinking about in order to stay ahead of the curve in light of this new field of technology that will quickly become the norm? Ladies and gentlemen, Kathy Hackle. Kathy, thank you so much for being here. It is great to finally have you on the podcast. Where are you joining us from?
I'm in Washington, D.C., in the Washington, D.C. area.
Excellent. Excellent. And you grew up, as I understand, in Costa Rica, if that is right?
I kind of grew up all over the world.
Yeah,
my dad was a diplomat, so I'm a Diplo brat.
A Diplo brat. Upbringing. I love that.
And moved around a lot of different places. But then, yeah, my parents were Costa Rican diplomats, so I did spend a lot of time there. And I'm Costa Rican American. That's kind of how I define it. The concept of home is very vague when you grow up in that type of situation. So,
got it. And what's your most memorable place that you lived?
Colombia
in Bogota,
in Bogota. I had a fantastic time. Yeah, it was during a very big conflict that they had. So it was kind of not necessarily a safe time to live there per se. But regardless, it was a really fun time and had wonderful, wonderful memories of it.
Awesome. Yeah, it's my favorite cities in the world. Okay, so we could talk about lots of stuff, but we want to talk today about spatial computing and AI. And so let's dive into it. We won't have as much time as I would love to have with you, but I want to start with two questions I always begin my podcast with. The first one is, if you could complete this sentence for me. If you really know me, you know that.
That my children are the best window into the future that I have.
Wow. How old are your children?
I've got 3 kids, 13, 12, and 7. Ah. So Gen Alpha. Nice. All Gen Alpha, all the time in my household.
I love it. That's great. Second question, what is your definition of strategy?
This is interesting because I feel like there's so many ways to define it and everyone wants to put like this really like cerebral definition around it. So I just took a step back more on a macro level and I said, strategy to me is thinking about the present, how to optimize and do things better for the present, while always keeping your vision and your horizon onto the future, but also learning from the past. Because I think in order for you to do really good strategy, Yes, you got to think about the next quarter, but I think you need to think about the next quarter century as well and think about what did we learn the last quarter century. So I am a professionally trained futurist, you know, I'm a tech executive, but I'm always thinking about like, how do we make well-rounded strategy, especially in a time when things are moving so incredibly fast from a tech perspective? It's hard, but you know, so thinking about the future, thinking about the, you know, the present, the future, but also keeping in mind the past.
I love that. Yes, I love that. It's so clean and makes so much sense. And I love that you're thinking a quarter century, not 3 years, 5 years, but a quarter century. Wow. And you said that you are a tech CEO. Just tell us a little bit about your NASDAQ experience.
Yeah, I have a really great partnership with NASDAQ, and they invited me to be the first human to do the first bell ringing in the metaverse, so in the virtual space. And so, yeah, June 2022, we were invited to go open the markets, ring the opening bell, both in physical form. So I was there in physical form, but also in avatar form. And get this, we did it on live television. So anything could have gone wrong. Nothing went wrong. It was great. Yeah, and they have the memento actually of the first bell ringing in the metaverse as part of their museum. So yeah, you know, first human to do it. I'm a woman, a Latina. So like, I really celebrated that moment for women in general.
That is awesome. And I think right in Times Square, I remember seeing some videos of that and of you. That must have been a phenomenal experience.
Yeah. Cool. It is quite an experience to actually hit the button and open the markets. It's nerve-wracking. It's like, what if I don't hit it correctly? And then you're doing it on live television. it was a great experience. I'll always celebrate that and take that to the grave with me.
Amazing. All right. So talk to me about metaverse, Web3, spatial computing, virtual reality, alternative reality. There are all these terms. And I think that one thing that we talk a lot about here on the podcast is often it is the naming of the thing that allows people to make sense of the thing. Like Salesforce was talking about not software for a long time. And then someone came up with the term of cloud computing. There's an underlying metaphor that then suddenly it made sense and people adopted. So why spatial computing and why not metaverse, or why both? What's your view?
Yeah. So I do want to mention a caveat. People that are listening to this that might know me, they know me in tech circles, they know me as the godmother of the metaverse, right? And the metaverse has been a victim of its own hype, the word metaverse, not necessarily what it becomes. So I do want to mention that. So I want people to kind of like take a step back and like leave the baggage behind with the word metaverse. Let's not think about that. What I think people need to understand is spatial computing as a broad term. Many times you'll hear the word spatial computing, and people use it interchangeably with mixed reality or an Apple Vision Pro. I personally think that if you're replacing spatial computing for one single technology or one single device, you're being reductive. Because what's truly happening is that what you're seeing right now is the expansion of computing, right? And I'll explain that a little bit for your listeners. What you're seeing right now is that we went from desktop computing, like computing on our desks, the first computers that we had, to mobile computing that we could take with us everywhere, that, you know, the palm of our hands, to now spatial computing, where computing's about to break into the physical world through new devices, through a vision-enabled AI, and all these sorts of things. So what you have right here with spatial computing is not one single technology or one single device. You have a new field of technology that has hardware, software, data, and connectivity. Those are the four components, right? So it's a bigger concept. Just like mobile computing is a bigger concept, spatial computing is a bigger concept, right? So that's where I think it starts to get really interesting when you think about the word metaverse, right? And I will define spatial computing briefly for people not to get lost. So spatial computing is a 3D-centric form of new computing that is evolving, that at its core uses AI, computer vision, and extended reality, as well as other technologies, to seamlessly blend virtual content into someone's experience of the physical world. It is about to expand computing into everything you can see, touch, know, hear, sense, right? So it is massively important. It is the moment where human-to-human communication changes again, and the moment where human-computer interaction is about to change in new ways. And we can get into that, like, what does that mean when it comes to robotics, autonomous vehicles, all these sorts of things, right? So computing, you know, computing has evolved, desktop, mobile, now going to spatial, okay? What does that have to do with the metaverse? Because that was your question. It's this. Every time I spoke about the metaverse, I said, the metaverse is the successor state to today's mobile internet, right? What you're starting to see is people use the term spatial web. All right. So let me make sense of this right now. We went from the internet that connected information to the mobile web that connected information on the go and allowed us to connect with each other. Now we're going into spatial computing where you're going to start to connect the physical world and the virtual world together, right? It's an expansion of the internet. So spatial web is AKA the metaverse, right? So most people don't want to use the word metaverse. Now you're going to start to see the word spatial web, spatial internet kind of take over. So when you're talking about spatial computing, you're talking about the expansion of computing beyond screens. And then you're also talking about the evolution of the web for mobile web to spatial web, right? To a web that is going to be more around us, that is going to allow us as humans to see that virtual layer of data that we can't really see, or that we're living through our phones. We're going to be able to see it in front of us. So when
people visualize that, I would imagine that, I don't want to say we're visualizing it incorrectly, but I think that there are probably some misconceptions of what that is, because we're basing that off of some metaphor that we have of something that exists. What do people often get wrong when they try to envision what the spatial web is?
Yeah, I think that they what people get wrong most of the time, I think, is that they're over-indexing on the hardware, right? They're like, okay, so they're always thinking about a certain device, or they're obsessed with the, you know, some of the new AI hardware that's coming, like the Humane AI pin or the R1 Rabbit device, or, you know, all these new glasses that are coming, whether it's Meta or whether it's the Apple Vision Pro. So I think that's one of the mistakes, is people think immediately only hardware because we're so used to consuming the internet on hardware without thinking about this is actually about the creation of, yes, new hardware. And we're going to see a Cambrian explosion of new hardware devices in the next six to 24 months. But you're also going to see a Cambrian explosion of new software. Right. So whether it's game engines pushing forward, whether it is LLMs, whether it's large vision models, which is what comes after large language models, whether it is large action models, like all these sorts of things that are happening in that space, that's all part of the software. You're going to see also new data types. And what I mean by that is that you're going to move away from just 2D files to, you know, from pixels to voxels, for example, to from regular 2D video to video that has depth, or spatial video.
So what are voxels?
Voxels. So instead of pixels, these are three-dimensional, right? So they have more volume, right? So it's actually, you're able to see things in depth, and you're going to be able to see it from every angle. So what happens when you actually break free of the screen is, right now, if I'm working on a 3D file or something on my computer, I'm still working on a flat screen, right? I move it around like it's 3D, but it's still flat. When you break into, you know, a device that can actually put that 3D model in front of you and you're actually able to walk around it, it's actually 3D, right? It becomes volumetric. So you're going to see new data, new content types, right? And you're also going to see connectivity. You mentioned cloud, for example. I spent some time at AWS working on large scale gaming simulations. And cloud, I mean, we're going to need cloud computing, edge computing, Wi-Fi, not even 5G or 6G are going to cut it when you're talking about multiple new devices, multiple new hardware and media types operating on these devices. So yeah, I think that's what people are wrong. People think of only maybe mixed reality or a single device. That's what they're getting wrong. And then, you know, when people push back and say, well, I don't think the internet's going to change, I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure that it's going to remain the way it remains? Because it has evolved, right? It has evolved throughout the years, and something is going to replace the current way we engage with technology.
Fascinating. Yeah, I got to get my head around that. But I see what you mean, that the flat interface that I interact with, even if it attempts to simulate a 3D environment, it still is like looking at a moving flat photo. I'm not actually experiencing depth. So it adds a whole nother dimension to your experience.
Anyone that's tried the Vision Pro, for example, and tried spatial video.
And you're a developer of... as part of the pro,
I'm a developer on Apple. For the Apple Vision, for Apple Vision Pro experiences. So when you try the device, for example, and you can go into spatial video, you actually see video in it more than 3D. It's in depth. It has depth sensing, so you feel like you're there. So this is even like new media content types, new future of the family photo. I already use the device. You know, I use it for entertainment, but I also use it if I travel quite a bit. If I miss my kids, I'll put my Apple Vision Pro and go into videos of them, and I feel like I'm there. Because there's depth to it. Like it feels cozier. It feels more natural and more human and more connected in that sense.
Wow. Beautiful. So let's talk about kids and digital people of my generation. You know, they have this view that there is real and there is not real. I think in preparing for this, I stumbled onto a Keanu Reeves video. I think you shared it, yes, on one of your speeches. And he's talking to a little girl. And I forget exactly, but basically she doesn't care if it's real or not. So talk to us about how do people who grow up with a digital experience, how do they think about the digital experience as relates to the real experience?
The real. I think taking a step back and thinking about it in that sense, I think for millennials and older, the concept of the real world and the virtual world, mm-hmm. right? But if you're Gen Z, which to me is like the TikTok generation, and if you're Gen Alpha, who are the kids of millennials, for them, it's the physical world and the virtual world. It's all real. It's all continuum, right? Whatever happens in that virtual space is equally as real. So I use these two examples, two very clear examples, and anyone that has kids in their lives are going to totally relate to this, mm-hmm. are the following. First, if my son is playing Fortnite or Roblox and fights with one of his friends, if he sees him at school tomorrow, he's going to be equally mad. It doesn't matter that it happened in a video game. It happened to him for real, right? He's still going to be mad because his house got blown up or whatever. Then the other example is for my son, his first concert was actually during the pandemic. And you ask how? Well, it was Lil Nas X and Roblox, right? So he says, I was there. I saw Nas. Like he was there in avatar form, but he embodies that avatar. He embodies that experience. And you see that. And another example, I don't use this one as often, but for my kids, the concept of the virtual is very real. If you ask most kids nowadays, you ask them what they want, they'll say, I want V-Bucks or Robux, which are digital currencies inside video games, to buy skins and to buy virtual items. I remember one of the Christmases, my son asked me, like, Mom, what is Auntie so-and-so going to give me? And I said, Auntie so-and-so is going to give you $20. And he immediately made the conversion into Robux, which is the digital currency inside the game Roblox. He can't do that with euros, but he can immediately make the conversion into a digital currency that is of value to him, right? So I think for millennials and older, reframing the mindset that the virtual is separated from their life, you know, is important because for Gen Z and especially Gen Alpha, this is all part of a continuum. It's all real to them. It all happens. It is all important to them. So I think it's reframing your mindset a little bit in that sense.
So as more of the assets that a company makes are digital, there's no marginal cost to produce them, right? So many traditional industries are rooted on limited supply. There's only so much oil. There are only so many diamonds. And I have control over them. So therefore, its value is supply and demand. How does that play out with digital assets?
Yeah, I mean, you can create scarcity, right, in some ways of saying only a certain amount of skins are going to be giving or only a certain amount of virtual tickets to a concert. So you can still create that, you know, illusion of scarcity. It's a little bit different, right? Because I'll give you an example. I actually, in the many fun things I've gotten to do in my career is I got to produce virtual concerts as well inside Roblox. So I produced Electric Fest for Walmart and worked with Madison Beer, Kane Brown, and Youngblood on a virtual concert for Walmart. And when we were creating their virtual couture, so the things that their avatars are going to wear, we said, okay, well, do we want to create these as skins that everyone can have? Or do we want to create these just as one-off virtual couture moments? So think J-Lo in the green dress, because I think everyone has that picture in their head. We said, let's go with J-Lo in the green dress, where this is a virtual dress or virtual outfit that you sing, that you use in a specific song, but no one else can use it, right? It'll be only for that specific moment for in your career. So yeah, I think that there's ways to create those sorts of things, right? We could have said like, oh, let's have everyone dress up in the same skin and wear the same dress, the beautiful dress that we designed for Madison Beer virtually, but we didn't. We said, okay, let's leave it as an exclusive, as a virtual couture moment in history, just like, you know, not everyone is going to wear J-Lo's dress. So same thing. So I think you're starting to see that. And yes, I will say creating couture in ones and zeros is a lot easier when you need to make a change than physical couture. So there are some benefits in things, but you can create some level of scarcity if you wanted to.
So who's going to be the next designer then?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. I have a famous quote. People know me for it. Even the folks at Roblox know me. I said this in 2020. So like a long time ago, I said the world's next Coco Chanel is probably a 10-year-old girl designing skins in Roblox. And I wholeheartedly believe that, so much so that I actually reached out to one of my former universities, the Florida International University, and I said, I want to fund
the world's... I teach at FIU as well.
At FIU? Yeah. I have an endowed scholarship with them.
Oh, wow.
Because I said, I want to be able to fund that next Coco Chanel.
Amazing.
So we created the Kathy Hackle Virtual Fashion Endowed Scholarship to, you know, make sure that we find that talent that wants to design virtually, because I truly do believe that there's a huge opportunity there.
So then talk a little bit about the opportunity, because I've seen numbers of the size of the market for digital products and digital goods. And this was like 5 years ago and it already blew me away. How big is that market?
It's massive. And I don't think people give it the respect it deserves. I'm going to take it more from a gaming perspective, because it truly is about virtual economies inside gaming. Gaming, one in every three people in the world considers themselves a gamer. That's huge, right? Then also, gaming as an industry, as a whole, is bigger than Hollywood and music combined, right? I don't think people realize how massive gaming is. And they don't normally get the gaming as a culture, gaming as an industry of influence doesn't get normally the respect it deserves or the positioning it deserves. I think that's slowly changing. You're starting to see that with Disney investing $1.5 million in Epic Games, Netflix going all in on gaming. You're going to start to see more and more of that, what I call, I remember like in the 2000s, everyone was a tech company. Like every company
right.
was
everything's
a tech company.
.com. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, even like, you know, company like WeWork, my perspective wasn't a tech company, but you're a tech company. You know, you're going to start to see that. Like every company is not going to become a gaming company. Case in point, very recent, New York Times Gaming. I mean, more people are going to the New York Times for gaming than they are going for news. And you're starting to see it in their advertisement budgets. Just recently on a flight, I'm sitting down, I'm seeing all the ads before I watch a movie. New York Times Gaming ad. That's where their ad spend was going. It wasn't going to promote the news. So I think it's really interesting to watch this moment where gaming as a culture, as an industry of influence, is starting to kind of seep into everyday culture and into more of that corporate America. You're starting to see this. Yep. Like it's very, very clear to me in the path forward.
Let's talk about, you know, early 2000s, everyone was a tech company. Yeah. I feel like now everyone is an AI company. I'm making ball bearings and I'm AI ball bearings. But what is the contribution to, or how does AI fit into metaverse or spatial computing?
So AI plays a critical role. Like what's happening with generative AI right now, we arrive at this moment with generative AI, because a lot of these converging technologies are pushing things forward, right? So I don't think we would have arrived at this generative AI moment a couple years ago. We're arriving on it right now because, you know, data centers can process, like, you know, can process more queries. Like there's a lot happening. There's been lots of advances. So what is the role of AI here? AI is critical for enabling that next computing platform, that next computer iteration. One thing that I think people are not thinking about, and I think to me is incredibly interesting, is the fact that pretty soon, I think in a year or two, large language models are going to run out of data from the internet. They're going to have consumed everything that there was or has been created, right? They can go through all that data, right? So where are we going to train AI from in the future when that happens, right? We're going to have to train it from real-time data of new devices scanning the physical world in real time, right? That's where spatial computing
is. So IoT connected devices, implantables, wearables, and
everything. Everything. That's when AI goes from like something we engage with on our, you know, on our computers or our phones. Because right now, if you're using ChatGPT, like you and I were talking, you're gonna use it on your phone or your computer, you know, and everything. But eventually you're gonna want your AI to kind of come with you and do things and actually have perspective and context and be useful to you in the physical world and truly do things for you or see things, right? So I think that is the next iteration that is coming with AI. Large language models, you know, even Sora, for example, is trained on things of the past, videos that were created, pictures that were taken, drawings that were made, articles that were written, all that stuff. You know, I don't have visibility into all the training data, but, you know, I'm assuming. So, you know, once you can have AI that is vision enabled and can be trained in real time, that's where I think you have a huge unlock for AI that will be very, very useful. AI that can truly be helpful to us in the physical world. So yeah, like this is a moment of convergence, a moment of all these things converging. And if you're only, this is the thing that drives me nuts. If you're only thinking about large language models, you're missing the point. You're missing the point of how transformational this moment is when it comes to web, when it comes to computing, when it comes to everything kind of coming together.
Yeah. So I can imagine that companies are sort of naturally myopically focusing on certain aspects, right? Because maybe they're just looking at virtual reality and not thinking about how blockchain layers on that and how digital customers layer on that. So I can think, we only have a few more minutes with you, but if we look at the business model, there are new ways of delivering value. There are new types of assets that you create. There are new ways of organizing. There are new ways of interacting with your customer. So what would you say is the area of the business model that companies maybe aren't thinking about, but should be thinking about?
There's two things here. One is new content types. Right. So we're going to see an unlock. Yes, you're going to see new hardware, but you're going to see new content types. Right. So if you're a media company, and I know there's a lot of doom and gloom about like a traditional media company, you're about to go into a world where there's voxels, there's volumetric video, there's spatial video, new content formats that we have never seen before. Then the other thing is something related to what you're working on, which is proximity. Right. And this is, I want people to listen to this and listen to it twice. When everything within eyesight and earshot of you becomes real estate, how does that change how you deliver a service or a product? Once again, when everything within eyesight or earshot of you becomes real estate, how do you deliver your service and product? Because that is what is about to happen. When computing expands into the physical world, everything around us becomes a spatial interface, right? We're not just going to be consuming it on our phones. It's going to be all around us. That data layer becomes visual. So that is a critical moment for thinking about how am I delivering my service or my product in real time at the point where that person is at. So huge implications.
Fascinating. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I'm going to encourage people to, of course, buy your book. We're recording this before it's out, but it'll be out soon. We've written other books as well. You've got great content. You've got an amazing podcast. I listened to a bunch of your interviews. Just fascinating. Mind opening. How would you suggest people continue to learn from you and stay connected with you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, check out my podcast. It's on the Adweek Podcast Network, Tech Magic. It's called Tech Magic with Kathy Hackl. And then LinkedIn. I share a lot of great content. I put out a lot of useful free content out there. So for example, I commissioned Harvard to do a study on Generation Alpha. That's free and available on the internet. I have a mini book called A Wearable World as well. That's free on the internet. And then, yeah, my book, Spatial Computing, an AI-Driven Business Revolution, is coming out May 14th.
Awesome. Well, Kathy, I know we didn't get to cover everything that we could cover. It is fascinating. And thank you for stepping out into the future for us and thinking, making sense of this future for us and bringing it to us. Thanks for the work you do and for sharing some of that here. It was so great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our executive producer, Karina Reyes, our editor, Zach Ness, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you soon with another episode of Outthinkers.